Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and I'm joined by Alex Brown. Alex, how are things in Cornwall, England today?
Very good. Thank you, Graham.
So we're going to do some of the usual wiretap stuff. This is the wiretaps episode for Monday, November 18, and we're going to do three candidates that you've selected, and these are really interesting. Always appreciate the work you put into identifying people that not only need our advice, but that we think will be instructive for others, you know, to hear the advice that we're giving. So appreciate that. But before we do that, what's the latest from Livewire? What's been going on the website in terms of candidate activity and admissions decisions and things?
Yeah, I mean, last week, the sort of big activity was Stanford has sort of ended its interview invite period and released the remainder of its round one candidates. So obviously that's a little frustrating for those folks, but it also gives them some degree of certainty in terms of going forward. So hopefully they can be planning on other schools.
Yeah, and I will say you're being very polite. I mean, the schools use this very polite language of, you know, that was the end of the interview invitations and they've released everyone else. It sounds like everyone's gone off to heaven or something. But yeah, so they rejected. There was a sea of red on Livewire as all the rejections came in because, you know, most people apply to Stanford, don't get an interview and don't get in. That's just, you know, it's the hardest school to get into. And I think, like you say, at least these people who've been released or rejected can, you know, can kind of reconfigure their strategy potentially for the coming round in January for other schools. So it's good to get the news. One of the things that always has bothered me, and when you and I were working in admissions at Wharton, it was very much this way at most schools, which was that people would be waiting until the day of the admissions decision, usually sometime in December or even January, to know if they were out or not. So at least most schools now have the decency to kind of release people the way Stanford does and most other, you know, most of the other programs. So anyway, on with what else has been going on Livewire?
Yeah, I mean, there are still some schools inviting candidates on a sort of a trickle out, sort of a rolling basis. We saw activity from schools like Cornell a little bit more last week. And we'll still see some of that activity over the next couple of weeks with schools like Cornell or Anderson, possibly Stern and a few others. This upcoming week, we're going to see a couple of big schools releasing round one decisions over in Europe. So London Business School, INSEAD and ESADE are all releasing their first round decisions. So that'll actually be quite exciting. Time, sort of the early big schools for the round one decisions.
Yeah, this should be a good week for those heading to Europe or interested in the European schools. I think just so that our listeners, if you're waiting on LBS, LBS has a tradition of getting things out a little bit later in the day when it comes to these decisions. They used to be even after hours sometimes, but I think they're a little bit more kind of in business hours these days, but it's usually not first thing in the morning. So that's the London, you know, business school angle. And I can't recall, I know INSEAD, sometimes people's admissions officer that's been assigned to them in the process is the one that kind of notifies them. But we'll stay tuned. A lot of exciting news this week on Livewire. One other thing I had a question for you. I don't mean to put you too much on the spot, Alex, but what's going on with Yale these days? I know that we had talked last week about how they seem to have like released some of the round one candidates and they've interviewed, you know, offered interviews to a bunch, but it seems like, are there any more interviews trickling out or is that kind of, do we think they're done and that they're going to be rejecting the rest soon?
Yeah, it's a very good question, Graham. Looking at the data that we have, I think there might be a few more interviews still to come out, but conventional wisdom is more to the fact that they have sort of concluded that part of the process. So we shall see. If we see some Yale interview invites, I won't be surprised, but if we don't, I won't be surprised either. So there's a complete non-answer to your question.
Well, we'll see. Yeah, never know. So speaking of all of this, I think some of this depends on application volume, right? So if schools have a ton of great applications in the first round, then obviously they're going to be generous with interview invitations. If the pool is just smaller this year, then maybe we'll see fewer invites going out because schools are, you know, typically not, you know, not in the business of sacrificing quality, at least not yet, in order to build their class. So that's a possibility. And that actually reminds me, you and I spent some time doing a kind of bonus episode or just a non-wiretaps episode of the podcast in which we discussed the MBA kind of in crisis in terms of application volume, and whether or not this is also simultaneously the year of the MBA applicant. So we recorded a, you know, half hour podcast that's going to be coming out this week. And I encourage everyone to tune in for that, because we try to really unpack what's been going on with application volume and, you know, to kind of lend some realism to the debate, which has been sensationalized in a number of other media outlets. So stay tuned for that. And the last thing I'll say before we dive into our profile reviews this week is that we really need you to rate and review the podcast. I know so many of you have said great things about the podcast when you post to ApplyWire and ask to be on the show or to be featured as a profile. It'd be great if you just take the time to write those same kind of comments over in the iTunes store or wherever you listen and can rate and review the podcast, whether it's Stitcher or Google Play or Spotify or Apple. So we appreciate it. Would love to see the reviews there. And just keep them coming in. And right now we have a 5-star rating, Alex. So hopefully we'll maintain that going forward.
Very good. Very good.
All right. So let's dive in. You've picked 3 candidates for us to look at today. And we're going to talk about Wiretap's candidate number 1. So this person wants to start, it says intake year of 2020, but my sense is that they're really going to be, it sounds like they're waiting and they're going to apply to start in 2021, if I understood the post correctly. They're currently working in management consulting, and they hope to be in the kind of consulting tech or media domain after business school. And they listed Bain, BCG, McKinsey, and Google as potential landing places post-MBA. The GMAT score is 710, GPA 3.96. They currently have a couple years of work experience, and they are located in Colombia. And they want to end up in the US, ideally on the East Coast. Target schools include Columbia, spelled differently, Harvard Business School, MIT Sloan, Rice, Stanford, and UChicago Booth. So they also mentioned that they were born and raised in Bogota, Colombia, and that in 2012, they went over to the US to pursue a bachelor's degree. They were 18 years old, went to University of Cincinnati, graduated summa cum laude with a 3.96. Hard to do much better than that, as we mentioned here. And they were a business, economics, and international business major. So, you know, they give us a ton of detail here about their work, which sounds really impressive. They also did an exchange while they were in college over in Belgium. So a lot going on here, and a, you know, pretty interesting candidate. They wanted to get some advice from us, though, and you had a little exchange with them on the site. So why don't you walk us through what you think of this candidacy and maybe tackle some of the questions they posed?
Yeah, like you say, Graham, I think this is actually a very good candidate. 710 on the GMAT, 3.96 GPA, which again, you have to admire people that have nearly straight 4.0 type GPAs or very close. I'm curious what class that they didn't do particularly well on and probably got a B plus instead of a plus or something. But no, that's impressive. And I think, you know, they probably got a really good job coming out of their undergrad relative to recruiting at University of Cincinnati. I think that's where they went, and have you know, spent coming up to three years in consulting. And through their descriptions, it looks like they've actually had some really good leadership. They're on a progressive track, and you know, clearly shown impact in on the consulting assignments that they've been engaged with. I think one of their concerns is that they're working for a mid-tier consulting firm, and should they sort of try to get a better brand on their resume? And we talked about this before coming on air, Graham. I think absolutely not in terms of trying to switch up just for that reason. It looks like the types of experience the candidate's been exposed to has been very good, and they should look to continue that and just keep raising the bar in terms of their impact. So I think we both agreed with that. If they can increase their GMAT score, which they suggest they're planning to try to do, that's always a good thing. A 710 GMAT score coming from Columbia, I think, is a pretty good score in of itself. So if it gets up to 730, 740, combined with a 3.96 GPA with strong experience in South America across a couple of different countries, and 4 years experience, so they're going to take this additional year. I think we have potentially a very strong candidate for the M7 programs, Graham.
Yeah, and I would say the only, you know, the only kind of blemish on their record is they mentioned they've listened to almost every Wiretaps episode. So I don't know if that means they're a little crazy or what, but...
Well, they actually said they're not, there aren't enough of them, so...
I know. No, but in all seriousness, we did appreciate that feedback. They said that they wanted to be featured, and the person mentioned that they discovered it a couple months ago and have probably listened to all the episodes and actually wish there were more. So we really appreciate that kind of feedback. But in terms of what they need to do, I agree. Like, if they could improve the GMAT, why not? Especially since they're not going to apply now till next fall. So they have time to work on that. And 710 is great. And I agree, the Latin American GMAT scores, if schools actually were to break it down and publish it, they would be a little bit lower. There's not the tradition of standardized testing there. And schools are very accepting of that. So, but yeah, boosting it, why not? I mean, especially since this person is aiming high. I mean, they have Stanford, Harvard, MIT, Booth, Columbia, right? These are all M7, and they mentioned Rice and Foster as potential safety schools for them. So getting a better score would help. The one question mark I had here was around extracurriculars, which, you know, again, not as common to see in some overseas candidates, you know, but it's sort of still expected to a certain degree. So I would want to know, what does this person do with their spare time? I don't think, like you, that they should change jobs. I think it doesn't matter that it's a second tier consulting firm. I loved the fact that they went off and did a project in Argentina for 9 months and, you know, have been promoted already to senior consultant. So everything looks good there. I would say just want to know a little bit more about outside activities. But I agree, if they can get it all together, put together solid applications for next fall, they should be able to get into an M7 program. You did have a thought about their approach if they don't get M7, because right now Rice and Foster are the schools they're mentioning as being outside of the group that they want to focus on.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're on the cusp of M7, then you should be applying sort of to what we would consider to be the next tier down a little bit. And, you know, schools like Ross, Duke, Darden, and you know, maybe Haas, Yale, you know, those sorts of schools will be your next sort of choice outside of the M7, rather than, you know, obviously Rice and Foster are very, very good programs, but there's a little bit of a gap there. So I would certainly fill that gap. The other thing also is just make sure that the long-term goal is nice and ambitious, as well as realistic based on who the person is. But they come across as a person with real sort of ambition to do very well and have high impact in the long run, and have a well-developed sort of focus in that short run in terms of their goal. Right now, I think they're looking at consulting or technology, or consulting in tech, or tech consulting, whatever it might be, but just make sure that side of the application is equally strong. And that side of the application does tend to mature and strengthen given time. So I imagine over the next year, that piece will develop further.
Yeah, that's fair. I would say I did wonder if Foster and Rice Jones were on the list because of proximity to some of these tech companies. So, you know, we know Foster being in the Seattle area, there's obviously Microsoft, Amazon, et cetera. And then down in Texas, Google and Dell and others have large, even Apple, I think, has a large presence in Austin. So I wondered if some of it was around that. I also know that there's a pretty strong tradition of Latin American students ending up in places like Texas. There's just a strong tradition of people going to university there. So there could be, you know, some family history or relationship with Rice or something. So that's possible. But I do agree that we probably want to encourage this person to, you know, they could hold on to one of those safeties if they want, but I think they might want to add something, you know, something in the middle ground too. Great candidacy. I think it's always nice to see someone who's kind of thinking this through and saying, you know what, I think I'll be a stronger candidate if I wait a few more months and I'll just apply next season. And so I wish them the best of luck as they continue at work and you know, if they try to boost that test score, et cetera. But great candidacy, and hope to hear from them next year. Maybe we can have them come back on as a future profile when we get some news from them going forward.
Very good.
So let's move on and discuss Wiretaps candidate number two. So this person's looking to start in 2020, so next fall, has been working in homeless services and affordable housing real estate, pre-MBA, and post-MBA is interested in entrepreneurship, nonprofit, and social impact type work. GRE score, 326, a GPA of 3.68, and this person's worked for 4 years, located in Oakland, California. They didn't specify where they want to be post-MBA, and they are currently looking at Berkeley, Columbia, Michigan, MIT, UCLA, and USC as target schools. This is a really interesting candidate, and they gave us a lot of nice background. They've been, they did an undergraduate degree that actually focused on race inequality, residential segregation, home ownership. So this whole idea of kind of the urban setting and urban planning and equality and things, and people's access, to opportunity. So they then went and worked for a couple years in homeless services. They were working in kind of grassroots community organizing, did a lot of direct kind of service with the community. And they currently are working in kind of, it sounds like, affordable housing development in the Bay Area. And they've had a whole range of experience in that domain. They're actually, I should mention, and this is really important, they're applying for a dual degree. So they want to get an MBA plus a master's in urban planning. And so that's why some of the schools are on the list, I believe. Yeah, they want to be able to kind of work in that domain, and they have some interesting career goals. But you had a lot of back and forth with this candidate, which is always nice to see. And so what? Tell us a little bit more about her. I think it's a her, I'm not sure, but let's say the candidate. Tell us more about what this person's about and the dialogue you had.
Yeah, I'm like you. I think there's a female candidate based on the username from the comments. So I'm kind of making that assumption, not that it makes much material difference. This is also a consortium candidate, so I'm assuming again from that this candidate's also an underrepresented minority student. I really like this candidate, shows a lot of passion and a lot of interest in doing some activities, professional activities, whatever, that have a high level of impact, looking at sort of disenfranchised communities and so on and so forth. So from that perspective, I think this candidate has a lot going for her in the MBA admissions space. I think ADCOM will really like this. It'll be up to this candidate to really demonstrate the level of impact she's had, the leadership and various other attributes that ADCOM look at as they compare this candidate with candidates with sort of, brand name experiences and so on and so forth. So to make sure that the level of experience that she's had is up to par. But reading through her comments, I imagine it absolutely is. I think this candidate should be applying to very top schools, and she lists some obviously very good schools: Haas, Columbia, Ross, Sloan, Anderson, and Marshall. Lots of schools there, Graham, listed based in California, but it just kind of irked me that she's not applying to Stanford. So I know we've had a bit of back and forth about this, but what's your point of view on that?
Well, I think, given the dual degree stuff, as she pointed out, Stanford wasn't on her radar because they don't have the urban planning thing. But I often find that, sometimes going to the very best, or one of the very best schools in the world for business, you don't necessarily need the dual degree to get into what you want to do. Although, this is a pretty niche area that she's focused on. And so I can understand it, but I had thought that there might be enough that she could kind of cobble together at a place like Stanford in terms of elective coursework that might give her, enough to get into the field. But I understand. I hear where she's coming from. Also, she pointed out Stanford's not a consortium school. And I know when, for those listeners who don't know, U.S. underrepresented minorities can apply to a handful of top schools through something called the consortium. And there's one application. So it saves a lot of time. But not all schools are part of the consortium. And in fact, a few of the very top schools don't take part, I believe. So I think Harvard's not part of it. And pretty sure Wharton's not either, although I don't have the list in front of me. So in any event, so Stanford's not on the list. So I think that was part of it too. But if she wants to do the dual degree, which is where I was kind of coming from, my only question for her was where are Harvard and Wharton on the list? Because those are two universities that have top 10 urban planning master's programs.
Good research there, Graham. Well done.
Yeah. and they're not on the list. You know what I mean? So, for example, you know, I mean, Wharton has this great dual degree with the Weitzman School of Design. It's an urban planning, you know, degree that they actually offer with Wharton's MBA program, right? So, yeah. So I was a little confused by that because, again, it just comes from a place of me being really impressed with this person's background. I mean, not only do they have kind of unique career goals and, you know, unique experience, I'm kind of, you know, the numbers are there. U.S. underrepresented minority, like, I mean, there's a lot to like here and for schools to like. And so my initial instinct was, okay, this person's going to go to one of the best schools in the U.S., probably for both degrees. And so, yeah, I mean, MIT makes a lot of sense. They happen to be at the top of the list of urban planning. So I think, you know, there's a good combo of an M7 school that's also, you know, top five in design, urban planning. So, yeah, I just, that was the thing. I mean, the only thing I was wondering about is, it sounds like the work experience, there's been some moving around, right? It's been a couple years doing the homeless services work, and then more recently, the real estate stuff. And I wanted to make sure that this wasn't kind of like a jack of all trades candidate, but that he or she, and we think it's a she, had really had some impactful and even some leadership exposure and experience, you know, heading into school, because that will be important. But assuming that's the case, you know, I think that, yeah, sky's the limit. And so, I was curious to know where this person went to undergrad, just to kind of level set on the numbers. But again, really strong candidate and a lot to like. And I can just imagine the unique dialogue that this person would bring into the classroom.
No, absolutely. And the potential future impact of somebody like this. And, you know, again, I just hark back to that first essay of Stanford. And I think even if she's not going to apply to Stanford, she should examine that first essay. It'll really help her sort of maybe sort of pitch her applications to the other schools she applies. She's also, you know, she has a 326 GRE, and she asked, should I try to obtain a GRE score 2 points higher in order to increase my chance of scholarships? And she believes she's capable of that. And frankly, just like my advice to any candidate, if you're capable of improving your test score, a smart person improves their test score. I mean, you want to be applying with your absolute best applications, whether that's to get into the very best programs that you can. And again, Graham and I think that this candidate should be pitching at the very, very best. But then also to increase opportunities for scholarship money, which, again, with a profile like this and the aspirations of this candidate, there's probably quite a lot of scholarship money potentially available. So I think she should do that, as long as, again, taking the test again doesn't sort of compromise her ability to really fine tune those applications and get them in.
Right. And that's where I get a little concerned, because I think, you know, if you look at like HBS, I think the average GRE score is around 328. So she's like 2 points shy of that. So she's in the ballpark big time. And I think given all the other attributes, I would say, I mean, sure, if she feels like taking it again and thinks she's absolutely going to hit out of the park and get a, you know, 330 or something, like, I guess why not? But I am worried that it's going to take some work, especially if she follows our advice and adds like Wharton and Harvard to her list, and those are going to require their own application, you know, because I don't think either of them are part of the consortium. So in any event, the other thing I would say regarding scholarship dollars, yeah, some of these schools can be incredibly generous, although Harvard and Stanford are not merit-based, they're just need-based. So that would just depend on her own financial situation. But a place like Wharton or MIT, I mean, I could see this person not only getting into these top schools, but like you say, getting in with some substantial dollars. So I think, yeah, putting a great application together is going to be important. And, you know, we're getting there. I mean, it sounds like she's going to be applying in January. So she's got to get things in gear, make sure the recommendations are great. And I think one potential area of concern or an area that she should be keeping a close eye on are the recommendation letters, because of the fact that she's coming from a non-traditional, non-feeder career for business school. So, you know, meaning like, I don't know if the person that supervised her in homeless services has a lot of experience writing recommendation letters for MBA candidates, right? So I think it's going to be important that she find, you know, find the right recommenders. And if I can make a pitch for it, she's probably download and read our recommenders guide that we sell, because it's got some nice examples, and it actually even has, I think it has a section you can kind of tear out and hand to your recommenders that teaches them about how this process works, and is a nice short executive summary, since we know those people are busy. But yeah, that's just something to keep an eye on, because I've seen, you know, a couple of non-traditional candidates along the way get sort of sunk by non-traditional recommendations. So yeah, somebody to keep in mind. Yeah.
No, I think that's a very good point.
Anything else on this one? Again, we really appreciate this person sharing so much about their background, and love to have a profile like this to discuss on the show, because it brings out a lot of different factors, from non-traditional to the consortium, being a U.S. minority, and also dual degree stuff. So there's a lot here that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I just wish this person the best of luck, and really look forward. Well, I'm not going to look forward, because I won't know, but I imagine that she'll have a real good impact in the long run, which is fantastic.
Yeah, always nice to see that. So let's move on to Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this candidate is currently working in government consulting and lobbying, and they're applying to business school now. They didn't share the exact nature of their post-MBA career, but they did share that they have a 690 on the GMAT and a 3.46 GPA. They've been working for 3.25 years, so they'll be at about, I guess, 4 years when they start business school. And they're located in Washington, D.C., and they have applied to, they actually applied in round one to Duke, Rice, UNC, and UT Austin. And they mentioned that not only did they apply to those schools, but they've interviewed at all of them. Now, in some cases, those were interviews that they initiated, because some of these schools have an open policy for interviews. But I don't think that's true in all of the cases. So congrats to this person for getting those round one applications in. But interesting background with this kind of government consulting and lobbying, DC person. What's your take on this candidate, and what made you kind of gravitate towards picking them to discuss today?
There's a couple of reasons why I picked this candidate. In the notes section, they said they applied and interviewed at all the schools for round one, which, as you point out, might not mean that they were invited to interview at all the schools. At least a couple of the schools that they listed have open interviews. But even those with open interviews do then invite those that don't take advantage of the open interview. So they might have been invited to all these schools, but they might not have done either. But the point is they're into the final stage of round one, and they're still in the running at all the schools that they applied, which is fantastic. The caution is, if you're a very good candidate, you could get admitted to all the schools that you apply. If you're on the margin, you could seriously blank at all the schools that you apply, even if you've been invited to for an interview along the way. And I raise this point just to make sure that as a candidate in this situation, they recognise that rather than if you've got invites to, let's say, 4 schools, and let's imagine all schools are sort of 50% admits to invites, it doesn't mean to say you're going to get admitted to 2 out of the 4 schools. It's more likely that a good portion of that pool will get admitted to all 4 schools, and another good portion of that pool will get admitted to 0 schools, because that's where their profile fits for the school. So I just wanted to sort of try to make that point. Not sure if I made it correctly or not, but you sort of get the idea. So I'm hoping that obviously this candidate is successful and get something in the bag for round one, which would be very good. So we've got Duke, Rice, Keenan Flagler, and McCombs in the running. If they are successful, then they have the opportunity to go into round two. And with an admit in the bag in round two, they could ratchet it up a little bit and maybe aim a little bit higher. So, for instance, if they're admitted to Duke, they could apply to other top 16 programs, or maybe even sort of an M7 school, and sort of, you know, take a big swing or whatever, knowing that, yeah, Duke's great great option to have in the bag. If they're admitted to sort of Rice, Keenan Flagler, and McCombs, again, more top 16 schools, might be worth exploring. If they do go that route, you could almost make an argument that they could consider retaking the GMAT, get that up a little bit. 690, small margins, but a 710, 720 might actually make a little bit of difference for them, or whatever it might be. So they might want to consider that also. And obviously, if they blank at all these schools, they've got to take a hard swallow and really think hard about then their round two strategy. They wouldn't be aiming higher. They would probably look at more sort of top 20 type programs. And again, they might want to consider taking the GMAT again too in that scenario. So where it all boils down to it, Graham, with this candidate, what they could be doing now, if they were really ambitious, is think about, is that GMAT score one that they want to settle with? And it might be that they've taken the test two or three times, and this is actually a very good score anyway, but relative to the top schools, there's some margin potentially to improve to get closer to the averages.
Yeah, absolutely. So there were a few things that I thought on this. I mean, the first is that, so I did a little bit of homework, and it turns out that Rice and McCombs at UT Austin both do interview by invitation. So this person was asked to interview at those two schools. With Duke and UNC, they have more of a mixed process where some you can sign up or they could call you. So we don't know, because this person didn't specify if they just signed up or if they were actually invited. But I think we do have at least a little bit of evidence that here's someone with a 690 that's kind of below average for top MBA programs, but certainly close. And actually, it's probably above the average or around the average at, say, Rice, but it's certainly below the average at Duke, right? So this person's, you know, making some progress in round one, despite a slightly lower score. And I think that's probably, hopefully, you know, hats off to them for putting together a good application. They didn't give us a lot to go on here, but I'm assuming that they have a lot of really interesting stories to tell about their work in Washington, D.C. And, you know, there aren't that many government consultants / lobbyists who end up in the application pool for business school. So that right there gives them a leg up and a chance to add an interesting element to class discussion. So that's all great. But I absolutely agree with you that when I saw this, you know, profile come across, I was kind of like, wow, that, you know, there's a lot of potential here. We don't have a ton to go on, but it seems like, you know, the GPA is okay. The work experience sounds really interesting. They're having some luck so far in the process with at least a couple of interview invites. And so that got me thinking, like maybe they should have looked at a school that's even, you know, kind of north of the Dukes on their list to sort of see what happens in round two. Now, there could be other things. Maybe they're really constricted in terms of where they can go. Maybe it's got to be Texas or the Southeast. And so this was kind of the list that they constructed. But we don't have a lot of data on where they want to be post-MBA, like what they want to do, et cetera. But I think if this person said to me, oh, the 690, I just, you know, took the test, didn't really study much, and, you know, I could probably do better, I'd say, wow, go right now, rush to your local test prep crash course place, take a class or whatever you need to do, and get like a 730, and then turn around and apply to, like, you know, some M7 schools in round two. Because again, really unique background, and I'm sure there's a lot, you know, I hopefully there's a lot more to what's here in the profile in terms of the nature of that work experience. And I mean, there's gotta be, right? So yeah, so I think, but this actually outlines a really important strategic question for any of our listeners, which is, you know, what do you do from round one to round two? Like for many people, they're like, oh, I applied to all my schools in round one and I'm done. But then invariably, there are two scenarios. Well, the three, right? One scenario is you get into a school that you've been dying to go to and you're done with the process and amen, right? But there's another scenario, which is that you strike out and you've got to reconfigure your strategy and get some additional apps together for round two. But there's also another scenario, which is you do really well, but you realize, oh, I didn't aim high enough. And so that's where, you know, this person might land there. And then, you know, if they have the energy, go for it in the next round, because it can be really worthwhile to do so. Even though just from personal experience, I know, you know, you get into a few schools in the first round and it's tempting to kind of sit back and just sort of take one of the offers and be done with this process, which can be a really challenging process. But there's also often a lot of scholarship dollars in play. And so to the extent that you can spread your odds and apply to another school in the second round, if you're doing well, you might end up with like getting into a better school and even getting more money, because obviously some of these top schools have more money to spread around. So anyway, that's a long-winded response, but I'm hoping that this candidacy that we're talking about is kind of useful, not only for the person that submitted it, but you know, for everyone, because there's some interesting round one, round two type strategy considerations here.
Yeah, and quite honestly, Graham, in the old days, and I'm talking very old days now, when you're applying for round two, you didn't have all your results in for round one. But the way the cycles are now, you'll know middle of December how you've done with your round one applications, unless, of course, you put on the wait list. But that then gives you another couple of weeks over the holiday period, in the US anyway, the holiday period, to rejig things for round two. But smart people now, once the interviews are out of the way, start planning for round two, and then sort of just adjust those plans in the middle of December, ready for round two. So again, if there's some improvement in this GMAT to be had, now's a great time to go fix that.
So we're going to wrap up there, but I did want to leave our listeners with one more thought, which is that it's not maybe a good one, and that is that if the past two seasons are any indication, I do expect schools to make a pretty judicious use of the wait list. So that is the key thing you mentioned, which is that you may find yourself without any answers after round one, because you might be rejected at a couple schools, in at a safety, and waitlisted at a couple schools that you really want to go to or something. And that's just schools kind of hedging their bets and hoping to see what comes in the second round and then comparing you to that group. So hang in there, everyone. And we'll be back next week with another edition of Wiretaps. And in the meantime, stay tuned. We've got a special episode about the MBA in crisis and an application volume and all that good stuff coming for you later this week too. So Alex, thanks so much for taking part as always and for picking out these candidates, and we'll see you next time, I guess.
Great. Thanks a lot, Graham. Good luck, everyone.